Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. It's the 14th of August. The sun is rising and the Son of God is risen. And that is the central good news at the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ that we start with each morning here on Faith Radio Mornings. For sin is forgiven, death is beaten, and whatever the headlines that we walk through each morning on this show bring and the difficulties of life, there is always hope and always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus that has no end. So thanks for joining us this morning from all around the country, fellow believers gathering together like this. Love going through the relevant news and conversations of the day with you. Hopefully it's with a mixture of honesty and faith and hope all sort of mixed in, making it different than so many of the news programs that we might listen to or watch that might get a little angry or antagonistic. We really want to walk through this together as believers from around our worlds. And before getting into the news and topics of the day, I thought I'd introduce myself. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. I am a professor here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Love being on the radio as well with you each morning. I'm joined in studio by producer Logan Rausch, who handles the sound and the board. Good morning, Logan.
Hey, morning, Peter.
So are you up and Adam this morning? You got the coffee rolling, or are you sort of still kind of rubbing the sleep out of your eyes here?
I'm doing all right. I sat down on the couch on either side of two cats and almost didn't leave that couch this morning, but it was a good morning to wake up to.
Though, and those cats are sitting next to you purring. I mean, there's something about just the stability of that that makes it really tough. It's tough to get off the couch anyway, let's be honest. But when there's a cat on either side of you like that, it gets really tough that way. We got Paul Perreault in the newsroom, too, who just does a great job in real time bringing news and also just stacks of news that greet me when I walk into the studio each day. Does such a good job of researching and bringing guests from around our country for you as listeners from this Christian perspective. So good morning, Paul. Good to see you over there.
Good morning.
Anything interesting in the weather? Are we finally getting a little break from the heat? I know you're pretty dialed in with the weather from around our country.
Well, I mean, we talked yesterday about how hot it was in like Bismarck and much of North Dakota over the weekend. Today, they're looking at 70s. It's like the weather in the Dakotas and the upper plains can turn on a dime and you get the 9 cents change. It's crazy.
Yeah, when it turns that way, though, right, the whiplash going from hot to kind of semi-cool, it's just truly a breath of fresh air, as they would say. It just feels
as
like
you can say, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like all of life is going to be okay again. Well, before getting into the news and topics of our day, I thought it might be good to start with a quote from one of my favorite theologians, Dallas Willard. Willard says this about the world and how we as Christians can help. I love this quote from one of his books. It says, "The greatest issue facing the world today, with all its heartbreaking needs, is whether those who are identified as Christians will actually become disciples, students, practitioners of Jesus Christ, steadily learning from him how to live the kingdom of the heavens into the corner of every part of human existence." And it's such an invitation. Jesus says in the biblical text 93 times to follow me and keep following. And I know it's hard, but it's part of why I love doing this show with all of you, is a time we can get up and gather together and say yes again to however hard it might be to following Jesus. So if you've got quotes or thoughts in the listening audience, I love to hear from you as well. It's some of my favorite moments of the morning when you call in or you text or you give us a shout. The phone number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And just call or text at any point with a guest. You can ask questions, write in. We'd love to hear from you on Faith Radio Morning. So with that, grab your coffee or your tea, whatever you like to drink in the morning, and we'll get started with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation and talk through some of the headlines from Washington, D.C. next on Faith Radio Mornings.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol.
Well, if that Schoolhouse Rock song is running through your head for the rest of the day, you'll have Tommy Binion to thank for that. Coming out of Washington, D.C., that is his walk-up music, part of my childhood. I don't know, Tommy, were you a Schoolhouse Rock guy growing up, or is this something that you found later in life?
Oh, no, I loved every minute of it growing up. I loved government and civics class, and I loved substitute teachers that would show videos, and of course, you get Schoolhouse Rock in civics class, so I loved it.
That is good. I was a substitute teacher at one point, and at that point, it's really just about corralling the students, right? I mean, if you can even teach one thing, even a single syllable word or something in a day as a substitute, it can feel like a productive day. It's a really hard gig to have.
Oh, it's impossible. And bless those teachers who do it. It's really, really important, obviously. But, you know, when you were a kid, you saw a sub and you could sort of smell the fear and you knew that it was a day that you'd be able to act out. And so if there are kids listening, go easy on your substitute teachers. They have lots to teach you.
Oh, for sure. And substitute teachers love the children no less than full-time teachers. It is a tricky gig. So, well, I know there's not a lot going on in Washington, Tommy. I mean, you must wake up in the morning and think, what am I going to do today? There's very little news coming out of Washington, right?
No, it's a soap opera. This week is drama, 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 drama. And if you're following the president's Twitter feed or any of the quote-unquote breaking news this week, you know that it's not the sort of highbrow, high-stakes government policy drama that I think it's more uplifting to follow. It's sort of interpersonal soap opera drama, which is quite disappointing, to tell you the truth.
And you work with the executive branch specifically, right, in terms of some of the policy work that you do there?
Yeah.
So did Omarosa come and give you some suggestions before she left town, or how did this work this week?
You know, she did not. We didn't interface at all with Omarosa. It wasn't my experience that she had a heavy hand in the policy making out of the White House, but certainly she's making a splash this week. And I think that, you know, it's really disappointing. There's so much. I think as Americans, we're really anxious about the future of our country. We're really anxious about some of the issues that are important to us. And for this to take up so much oxygen, I think just is, it's one of those things that just crushes you.
Yeah, it really does take away from actually moving the country forward. And you use the phrase soap opera, and I think that's an apt description for that. And is there any further fallout from this, or is this one of these things that is going to sort of fade into the background, that there really wasn't much substance here other than some interpersonal relationships that went askew?
No, I think it's pretty much over. I will say that there's nothing on those tapes that's really bad for the president or the chief of staff. They said what you might expect them to say. Now, the scandal comes with some of the things that Omarosa is claiming they said, but there's no video recording of that. There is a scandal in that she recorded those tapes. There may be legal criminal action brought against her for having violated the trust of the federal government in that way. That's a very serious crime that she's committed. And we'll see if there's follow-up that way. But no, there's nothing in those tapes that I think present a problem for either the president or the chief of staff.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, Tommy, because obviously leaks coming out of what should be private meetings seems to be part of just the ethos, the atmosphere of Washington, D.C. Is it just bad form? Or when leaks come out, whether it's through the FBI or through the CRA or in meetings with the president, is that actually against the law?
It would depend on the context. You know, if you had a conversation in the hallway that then you went and told your friend about, no, that's not against the law. But if you're dealing in a classified context with classified information, which most of the conversations in the White House do, then that is a crime. But then when you take it a step further and you go into the Situation Room with a recording device and you record a conversation that's happening in the Situation Room, that is definitely a crime. And this is not something that a White House staffer wouldn't know about. The seriousness of the security of the Situation Room is not unknown to the White House staff. This was a conscious breach of national security, in my opinion.
Well, some of the other drama coming out of Washington, D.C. has to do with Peter Strzok, the now ex-FBI agent who was let go finally yesterday after a whole lot of drama about anti-Trump tweets that he sent out during the campaign time, where there was sort of this idea that they were going to stop him from becoming president. And what do we see in this situation now that he's been let go? Obviously, he set up an anti-Trump Twitter feed now right after it. What's been your take on this, Tommy?
Well, it wouldn't be surprising, I think, in any other industry. You know, he was responsible for investigating politically charged matters. Russia interference in our election and the Hillary Clinton server, these are politically charged matters. And if you are trusted by the Bureau to investigate something on that high level that's that politically sensitive, texting those texts amounts to malpractice. In any other industry, it wouldn't be surprising that he was fired. But for some reason, federal employees are afforded some sort of special protection. He hung on for a long time after these texts were revealed. But I think that we should have expected him to be fired. And I think as Americans, we're happy that our tax dollars are going to go to non-biased investigators from here on out.
Well, I would love your thoughts, Tommy. Obviously, the president has been critical of the FBI on some levels relative to this, and yet there's a lot of really good federal agents, too. So just talk about when something like this happens, what that does overall to the trust level and the credibility of an organization, however fortunate or unfortunate that might be.
But it completely zaps it. I think the FBI, imagine if you were the subject of an investigation of the FBI. You'd never be able to feel like they would get to the truth if you knew that their agents were this biased. Imagine if you're President Trump and your presidency has the stain of a 2-year investigation from a special counsel on it that so far has produced nothing on you, but it's a cloud hanging over your presidency. These matters need to be taken with the utmost sincerity and seriousness. And when we've got people treating it like a political game, it really, really undermines it. But the FBI does such important work. They keep us safe. They enforce the rule of law. The men and women that are part of the FBI are exhibit bravery and courage in the face of danger every single day, and they ought to be commended. And it's a shame that there's a couple of bad apples that that undermine that, but sincerely, the thousands of men and women that work there go to work for you and me every day, and I think we've got to remember that.
Yeah, I often hear about how law enforcement really is a thankless job, that we really only complain when things go bad, but we don't see just the regular day-to-day things in which our men and women in the uniform are doing each day on behalf of us as people. And so, Tommy, we'll take a short break. When we come back, I would love to get your take on this idea of the government shutdown on federal spending. I don't really know how a government shutdown actually impacts me, so I would love your thoughts about the president's threat with that as we come back with more on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm joined on the line by one of our friends of the show, Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. He's out of Washington, D.C., and works on policy matters with the executive branch of the government. Love having Tommy on. Can talk about anything. And relative to that, Tommy, did you catch anything about the Space Force logo that came out this last week? And were you excited about the next step as we head towards the stars together?
You know, I do think the Space Force is interesting. There's multiple opinions on it, though. You know, all of our branches of the military currently engage in space. Now, I was part of a conversation yesterday where a really important question was asked. If we're going to have a Space Force, what are the weapons going to be? And the answer came not from an official source, but just from an analyst who studies these things, that most of the weapons used by the Space Force would be classified. So, we haven't, I think, as the general public, had a chance to think through exactly what this would look at, though it is exciting. And, I want to see the movie about the Space Force. I would be excited about that. In real life, I think we need to know more, and we need to make sure that that if we're building a new branch of the government, we're doing it right.
I love it. You've piqued my interest with that one, Tommy, because I have to say, I just got done watching Empire Strikes Back with my three youngest kids last night. If you could find a classified blaster pistol that could take out stormtroopers, I will line up on eBay to buy that, baby.
It may exist, and we just don't know it. We don't know what's classified.
Well, speaking of the government and how they're spending their money and where we're headed with this, you have to walk me through the government shutdowns. I'm old enough now to have lived through a number of government shutdowns. And I have to tell you, Tommy, when the threats are out there about the shutdown and when they actually happen, I haven't noticed a dramatic change in my life. I haven't noticed that the buses stopped working or maybe garbage collection has gone down or anything. What are the implications if the president really does shut down the government over the funding of the wall? How can that impact daily life? And does it take sort of a while to trickle down into that daily life?
Well, the truth is it won't affect you at all, because the services that do affect you, they're called essential services, will continue. They won't stop in a government shutdown. So a government quote-unquote shutdown won't affect you at all. But don't tell the Democrats that. They think that every aspect of the government is critical to life in America, and it's just not. We've got a bloated federal government that's way too big. But the way this works is, right today it's August 14th. The House will not be back in session until September 4th. They'll have about 15 days at that point to avoid a government shutdown, and to do so, they've got to pass 12 bills. The appropriations process requires passing 12 bills, and the House and Senate have not agreed on a single one of those bills. And the president, of course, is down about 16 blocks down Pennsylvania Avenue saying he wants wall funding, and the Democrats are saying no. And so those of us that are studying this process and know how long it takes to get things done and know sort of how different individuals in Congress will vote on these things, I'm getting really concerned that the appropriations process is not going to end as it should, but it is going to end in a government shutdown. And I think this year might be less predictable than any year prior. I'm very interested in the appropriations process this year.
Hmm. So is the way this works that the president has the leverage in this situation because maybe there's some congresspeople who have made promises that they'll get certain things done on behalf of their constituency, and that's part of these bills and part of the funding, and the president says, we're not doing anything unless I get the wall, and then they have to turn around and face their constituency. Is that the leverage that he has in this?
He has some leverage, yeah, but so does the Congress. So if you can imagine, the Congress has put an appropriations bill on his desk and he vetoes it over the wall, and that leads to a government shutdown. That makes him somewhat vulnerable. The Democrats will charge that he is not a responsible executive. And the Congress, they have leverage in that they really he wants to avoid that. And he wants the Republicans to be able to send him a bill with wall money in it. So there's going to have to be – somebody's going to have to give up, or there's going to have to be some compromise here. In an election year, all of what's at stake in terms of political points and political vulnerabilities are heightened. And all politicians are extremely risk-averse and cautious, especially in an election year, with the exception of Trump. So I think the members of Congress, if it were up to them, this fall would be smooth sailing. There would be no drama. There would be no leverage. It would just be, hey, let's get through this spending process without anybody noticing. But when you add the president in, who's a stick of dynamite and really doesn't display that same risk aversion that other politicians do, you really don't know how to predict it. And he's out there on Twitter threatening a government shutdown. So it's quite the story this year.
Well, and is this an issue that the president is going to compromise on, do you see? I mean, he's talked about the wall a lot in his nearly 2 years in the presidency, but is this the time where he says, this is it, it's either funding or we're shutting this thing down, or will there be a compromise in this at this point, do you see?
Well, that is the question. During his presidency, there's been several moments where he has insisted on wall funding. He has not gotten it. And he settled to sort of fight again another day. At some point, he's going to make his last stand. That may be this fall. That's the tone of his tweets, is that he's going to make his last stand on the wall funding this fall. I also think that of all of the things that the federal government funds, border security ought to be top of the list. Certainly, if you look at polls, border security is a very important issue to the American people. It makes no sense that the Congress is unwilling to give him funding for border security. So I think, one, he's he's been waiting and waiting and waiting for this very important issue. But two, he feels like he has a winning issue. He feels like he's on the side of almost every American who wants a secure border. And for whatever reason, the Congress is on the other side. And when he has a winning issue or a winning hand, you can expect him to double down.
It's Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, we're out of time, but just love going through all of the headlines, sometimes drama in Washington, but the important policy matters, too, that really do end up impacting us around the country. And I have to say, if you get any hint or whiff of some kind of classified weapon coming out of the Space Force, you got to promise me you're going to text me first.
Well, that would be a crime. So I'm not going to do that.
Okay, well, fair enough. Okay, so is there some way through back channels you can get the information, Tommy?
We'll see. We'll see. If a classified space weapon shows up in my mailbox, I will tell everybody on the radio. That's the first thing I'll do.
I think that's very fair. Hey, thanks for joining us, Tommy. We love having you on Faith Radio Mornings.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and more coming up in the second half of our first hour when we chat with Dr. Rosemary Stein about parenting and depression. You won't want to miss it here on Faith Radio Mornings. And that is the music of Aretha Franklin. We're playing that this morning because there's news out of the hospital that the Detroit native is actually home and was with her family, and she's awfully sick right now. I know Aretha Franklin is one of those big and sort of iconic names in the music industry. It doesn't sound great at this point. She had a huge impact, I know, on the African-American music scene and really elevating a lot of the racial conversations in our country to the forefront where they need to be. And we can talk about just the different ways we experience our life together, whether it's through music or through our faith and the way that's expressed or through the food we eat, all of that. She had a great impact on our country. So Aretha Franklin, if you enjoyed her music, take some time maybe this week to kind of go back and think about all the Motown and the way that's impacted our country. We'll take a break for the rest of our news, and we'll come back in the second half of our first hour with Dr. Rosemary Stein. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we had a really interesting conversation with theologian Owen Strand when he was talking about gender, transgender, same-gender relationships, and the fact that we make identity statements out of these things, and maybe we shouldn't.
An individual who might think that they're a girl trapped in a boy's body at age 10, which is something that we're seeing in headlines all around us, that child may persist in that feeling over time. But also there's a very good chance, according to medical professionals who have no stake in the kind of theological debate, there's a very good chance that that child actually will age out of those feelings. So when we're talking about gay identity, we just have to know that these matters are fundamentally not nearly as fixed as the culture says they are. People can really change in all sorts of ways fundamentally. By the way, a Christian person is somebody who believes absolutely in the power of change, because our nature actually changes when we come to Christ. It's not simply that, you know, we start believing a few more principles, we tack a few more on to those we've always held. It's that we get actually a new nature through Christ, through the grace of God. So there's a lot at stake here. There's a lot of different places to go. We have to handle identity very carefully, and we have to define it biblically before we go anywhere else.
Such an important conversation. I don't think we can have too many of these conversations. It's such a confusing topic, and Owen did a great job of walking us through some of the dimensions of it. I know, Logan, for the website, you do a lot of the search engine kinds of stuff. If somebody wanted to catch that entire segment, where can they go?
You can visit myfaithradio.com and click on the Faith Radio Mornings tab, or you can search Owen Strand, Gender Identity.
Up next on Faith Radio Mornings, we have Dr. Rosemary Stein. We'll talk about some tips as we get ready to head back to school with our kids here in just a couple weeks.
It's been said, I am what I tolerate. This is Jim Garlow. In a 2016 article by the editor of the media site Vox, the headline reads, American atheists have radically different visions of the future. And just what is their vision of the future? The article's author wrote, we are at a turning point in American life. Religion, the long, stubborn source of our national ills, is finally dying. Many would like to minimize the relevance of Christianity in our history and our society. But if so, the result will be a nation without the moral compass of biblical truth. It will give way to a form of government that stifles our freedoms. We are at a turning point. a time to use our constitutionally guaranteed First Amendment rights to articulate a well-versed, in Scripture, understanding of community and national life. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine.
And that Mary Poppins music means that Dr. Rosemary Stein is joining us, as she does every other week on Faith Radio Mornings, to talk through just how to help with our kids psychologically and socially, spiritually, physically, all the way across the board. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
So I have to ask, there's a sequel coming up for Mary Poppins. Did they at least call you and you applied for that role?
No, not yet. I haven't heard my phone ring for that, but I'll gladly audition for it.
You'd be great. We love having you on. It's just the breadth of your knowledge, because I love what you do as a physician, is it isn't just medical care for the kids, and that is important, but you really think about kids holistically. So just remind our listeners what you do in your practice week in and week out.
Well, thanks for asking. I'm a pediatrician, but a few years ago, I really became more involved and more cognizant of the fact that our children were not doing well. So I began to help children more in the behavioral sense. And then I realized that to be able to do that, I had to help the crux of the home, which is the mom and dad, and specifically the mom. So I do a lot of counseling, a lot of guidance, a lot of praying with my patients, so that a lot of our, let's say, ADHD children, autism children, children with all kinds of behavioral concerns and concerns at school, are given the light of life and the hope that God would have for them and the potential that they should have again. And there have been hundreds of stories like that where lives have been transformed, but it's really through the hands of mom and dad that children can really find healing.
Well, and I love that. And we're going to talk later in our segment about saving America one child at a time, some of the stories that you've engaged with. I know it's a real important topic for you. And as we get ready to go back to school now and kids heading back in this sort of interesting rhythm where we get towards mid-August, what tips do you have for parents to help kids adjust going back to school, even families in general?
Well, the main one that I deal with parents is that they should be going back to their regular routines. And it's amazing to me how far away from routines the children go in the summer if we allow them to. And specifically, their sleep routines and their eating routines. So we have a lot of kids today that are going to bed, even when they're preteens, at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and they don't get up until the early afternoon. And that's just not good for a child's brain. And to readjust themselves to a normal routine is very, very important. So we're about a week or 2 weeks out from school, and it's very important for a child's brain to set themselves back into their regular times, because that's really, really important. Kids have a diurnal pattern, a pattern of being able to absorb daylight and for their brains to function. And they're going to miss out on the first several weeks of school being able to attain that potential if we don't turn that back. And certainly their exposure to cell phones and you know, just the common sense stuff. And the other thing is that our children are not used to having breakfast many times if they have this kind of pattern. And I tell them that breakfast is still the most important meal of the day, not for their taste buds, but surely nutritionally, and to be able to get that energy into their body. So all of these things are things for parents to be thinking about and looking at the children's schedule so that they set them back to what is normal.
So maybe if you've sort of gotten out of the rhythm, like I know we can as parents in the summer, you would suggest that backing up bedtime by 5-10 minutes, maybe getting up 5 or 10 minutes earlier each morning for a couple of weeks till you're back at that school time?
Absolutely. What I suggest to parents is that start waking them up at 8:30. So that it's easier for them to go to sleep. Don't just think, you know, you're going to put them to bed at 10 or 9, and all of a sudden they're just going to flip. You do it the other way. You start waking them up early, and so that they get tired by the time it's 10 or 10:30, and then you can start adjusting. So it's a thing of waking them up early, having a routine. This is what we're going to do at this time. We're going to start working a little bit. We're going to start reading out loud. We're going to start doing just one book report, maybe just 1 hour of a little bit of schoolwork, of classwork, to get their minds back into it. And all of that will build them to be more tired and more restful at the end of the day.
And you mentioned the importance of breakfast, too, when they first get up. But what are some good breakfast foods to get started with? I mean, I hear things about, you know, avoid the carb load, not big sugar cereal, look at maybe eggs, bacon, that kind of thing. But what do you suggest as a good breakfast fare?
Well, I like to suggest, of course, not the sugary cereals, but cereal is easy, and try to make things that, so that they're simple. So cereal and milk. I like whole milk just because that way they can absorb the vitamin D and the calcium because of the extra bit of fat. And you know, there's nothing wrong with having a toast and